and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco and I chat about the last year in garbage and how to stay happy when things keep getting worse. Then Crooked Media's own Priyanka Arabindi is in studio along with Kieran Deal and Megan Gailey to talk about crying. And as always, The Hills Will Die On. Hey, listeners, before we get to the show, a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to submit a Hill You'll Die On, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. You can also send other correspondence in that direction, but keep in mind that more people besides me check it. Caroline also checks it, so send love notes and hate mail to our personal addresses. Also, merch is in the works, and I'm biased, but it's really great. And also, I see all the gifts you're tweeting at me, people, about how merch has taken a long time, and I appreciate them, and I acknowledge the fact that I'm somewhat owned by them. But it is in the works. It's really cool. I can't wait for you to see it. I'm trying a new thing where I give a shout-out to a special group of listeners. This week, I want to give a shout-out to people listening to Hysteria from another country. And on that note, if you're listening to this, I'm currently on vacation. We pre-recorded this episode. So if everything went to shit and we're not talking about it on this episode, it's because I've successfully fled and I live in Italy now. Now let's get to the show. Hi, Alyssa.
ERG. What's happening, my sister?
ERG? EGR?
Yeah.
EGR.
Oh my God. I always write ERG.
Wow. There's going to be a callback to this later in the conversation.
Absolutely.
Alyssa Mastromonaco?
Maestro.
Mastromonaco. It's so good to talk to you.
You too.
Well, it's summer, which means that by the time people are listening to this, I'm going to be on vacation. We're pre-recording a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
So this is a very special kind of reflective Erin Alyssa chat that we're going to use. And if you're listening to this, I'm in Italy, unless things went terribly wrong. But hopefully I'm in Italy when you guys listen to this. But one of the things I was thinking about is this is the first we did a big kind of spell, I guess, of episodes right away. Then we took a break in January and we haven't really taken a break since. And we haven't really had a chance to pause and reflect on the year. Mm. So I wanted to kind of talk to you, Alyssa, about, you know, the first episode and what has changed between then and now. Do you remember the first episode?
Was there coffee cake involved?
Yeah, I made some.
Yeah, so I remember.
Okay. There was coffee cake, but then also it was the day that Kennedy resigned.
Yes. And then didn't we have to do a special episode?
We had to redo it.
We redid it. That's what it was.
Yeah,
okay.
we did it.
I totally remember.
You sound like you've got a great recollection. I mean, it seemed like a moment to me that day, even though it was totally annoying on many levels that he resigned that day. It was historically annoying, but it was also like logistically annoying for everybody because we all had to come back into the studio and do it again. But it seems like a fitting place for this podcast to start. Do you think we've been moving in a positive or negative direction since then?
Our podcast or the world?
Both.
So the podcast, definitely. I think that our podcast is very special, and I mean that sincerely. The world, not super positive direction. Now, that doesn't mean I think it's going to go off a cliff. But, you know, when you think about the first episode and talking about Justice Kennedy, that's before we knew the caliber of, you know, SCOTUS nominees that Trump was going to put up and
right.
who we were going to end up with. And so, you know, and then if you think about all last summer, he nominated Kavanaugh in like fucking July or some shit like that. And, you know, we fought so hard and you know, he ended up being Supreme Court Justice. And so I feel like it doesn't feel awesome. And what everybody thought was going to happen was like, oh, they're going to attack Roe v. Wade. Well, yes. I mean,
yeah.
The Supreme Court has not directly, but the people who hate it are super ginned up and just doing everything they can. And, you know, so I feel like, you know what, maybe it's just like it was going really bad for a while. And then maybe in the past couple of weeks, maybe it feels a little bit better because all the women are running for president and people just seem to be caring a lot more about women's issues, which makes sense since we're like 51% of the population.
Yeah.
But I guess that's a positive. Like, it's definitely, we're talking about more women's issues than we even did in 2007 and 2008 when, you know, Obama and Hillary were running.
Yeah, I think that that's true. One of the things that upon further reflection on the Obama years, when I wasn't involved in politics, I was just a snarky blogger toward the end of them. But I was covering politics toward, I was like snarkily covering politics and kind of like very tentatively tapping my toe into that world. But one of the things I think that was a downside of the Obama era was that a lot of people who are my age or younger just kind of felt like they could peace out and not really pay attention. And myself included, to the extent, before I was covering politics, before I was like working in media, there was times where I was just like, yeah, it's fine. Everything's fine. And everything was not fine. Things were going to shit for years. 2010 was a disaster and we're still dealing with that. And, you know, I think that the good thing about this era, I'm trying to kind of find a silver lining to it. But the good thing about this era is multiple. I think there's a lot of good things about it among the bad. One is that people have woken up and given themselves a crash course in civics. And I think we all know a lot more now. I mean, people who weren't in government before, we know a lot more now about how things work and how things can go wrong than we did before. And I think that knowledge of those things arms us hopefully against those things in the future. I also think that, to echo like an idea that Rebecca Traister has said a lot, is that women have gotten really, really angry. And it's been a sort of rising tide of this sort of productive anger, not like, you know, throwing bricks through windows. It's like angry women have channeled it into being productive. And 2018, to me, the election, it sort of was this encapsulation of all of these like problems and good things that I've seen in the era. Nobody really expected Democrats to pull it out to the extent that they did and in the way that they did. But I think that women who are on the ground, and I think women who were running, or women who care, who were paying attention, knew that we had it in us to put a lot of women of color, a lot of young women into Congress and to start taking back state houses that we'd lost. So I think like the bad is leading to people being galvanized enough to move towards something good. I just hope that I hope it's enough.
Well, hope it's enough and hope that nobody loses their energy, you know, like that it's been since 2016. It's been 3 years that everyone's been working their ass off. And so it's like, you know, maybe everyone's just learned how to pace themselves and realize that it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And, you know, 2020 is something for us to look towards, but it's not going to be the end. You know, even if Trump's not president anymore, it doesn't change what places like Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi and Ohio and Missouri have tried to do at the state level, you know, the local level. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing that, like, even when people are talking about 2020, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It's not just about who's running for president. Like, don't take your eye off the ball. Like, all those people who won in 2018 have to be reelected.
Right, exactly. And we have to do that. And we have to do it from a position of being behind the eight ball when it comes to states that have been gerrymandered, because until the Supreme Court does something about it, which they might in the next couple of weeks do something about what constitutes gerrymandering and how legal that is. Yeah, I think that's a really good piece of advice. But at the same time, it's like, don't you feel kind of daunted by it? Like the idea that we just have to do this forever. How do you stay happy? Like, how do you stay motivated?
Let's talk about happy.
Okay.
So I bifurcate happy from like fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's like doing our activism doesn't necessarily make me happy, but I feel like I'm doing something, right? Like, I feel like in the era of Donald Trump, doing something is a component part of like being happy. Mm-hmm. Because if I weren't doing something, then I'd be like, I'm just a fucking rotten piece of shit, you know?
Right.
But for me, it's like a lot of things that, you know, like you look now and everything that this administration has done, like all the protections they've rolled back, not just against people, but against our public lands and animals and like agreeing to trophy hunting again. And so I do derive a lot of like sort of happiness from trying to help the animals. That's like in a big sort of, I'm a good person way. I'm like, that's something that really gets me going. But like on a basic, like, how does Alyssa keep herself smiling? I mean, marijuana helps.
And it's getting legal in more and more places. So, I mean, congratulations.
More and more places.
Congratulations, Illinois, first of all, for doing.
I know.
That's interesting. The thing that you said about bifurcation, I've kind of done something similar between the concept of fun and the concept of good.
Yes.
There are things that are fun and good. There are things that are fun and not good. And there are things that are good but not fun. And the good in the not fun stuff is the reward of doing it. I mean, I think I sound like a, I don't know, like an unfrozen caveman learning about human interaction right now. But I think that there's a lot of stuff that is not fun, but it's good. Like going
yes.
out and working out on a day that you really don't want to is not fun, but it's good. Eating vegetables instead of a piece of cake is a lot of times not fun, but it's good. You know, waking up early and educating yourself on the latest fuckery from the right so that you can adequately respond to it is not fun, but it's good. But that doesn't mean that you should cut fun out of your life. I think my great grandfather, who is a lot of fun and sometimes not a very good person, he had a saying that he would kind of say to his family, which was like, you can't beat fun. You definitely have to have some fun in your life. So I think one thing that has made me feel a little bit more balanced has been paying attention to keeping myself physically active. So getting outside has been really good for me because sometimes it's really easy to get depressed about, you know, this little screen you can hold in the palm of your hand and it feels like the whole world fits into the screen. And really, if you look up, there's like infinitely more space than what is just there. And I also think like reading stuff that has nothing to do with politics sometimes or watching things that doesn't have anything to do with politics sometimes is like something that makes me happy. Like Fleabag right now is making me really happy.
I've got to watch it. It's like next in my queue because I just finished, well, I finished 2 weeks ago. I finished Dead to Me, which was same, like nothing to do with what's going on in the world. Totally sucked in. Love it all. I also unrelatedly find Law and Order SVU very satisfying because like 9 times out of 10, there's justice. And I find that justice makes me happy.
Yeah.
Like knowing that somewhere on this planet, bad people are getting what's coming to them does, you know, I never used to feel like strong after I watched SVU, but I do now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I guess that's something that writing has brought me, especially being able to do screenwriting, even though screenwriting is the worst and nobody should do it. It's terrible. But it's really fun for me to take like my anger or my frustration and fictionalize it and then make it funny. Like the show that we're just wrapping up the writer's room now, but the Always Sunny is a really fun place to work because the characters are really, in part because the characters are really bad people and you can kind of do whatever you want to them because within the world of the show, it makes sense. So writing something where you're just like, I'm making a fictional world involving these characters and this is what they're doing and this is how they interact and this is what justice looks like inside of this tight, you know, 22-minute script that I'm working on or whatever. It's like kind of cathartic. It's also, you know, like I said, writing is the worst and nobody should do it. But when it's fun, it's really, really great. And it helps a lot, I think.
Also, I've gone back to things that I was like, what used to make me really happy, like before all of this? And I've basically gone back to like my 17-year-old self. And I spend a lot of time up in this place called Columbia County, which is very rural in upstate New York. And I roll down all the windows in my car. I open the moonroof. It's like a sort of old Ford Escape and it has lots of stickers on the back. And I just sing so loud and drive back on like country roads. And at the end, you're just like, what could possibly be wrong with the world? The sun is out, the sky is blue. And I just sang along to an entire set of like the Grateful Dead from 1982.
You know, that's so funny because I have a similar praxis, as, except not involving the Grateful Dead, not involving 1982, but it's like the stuff I listened to in high school, like Hole. I listened to an album, listening to Hole or like kind of pop punk that boys told me to listen to. I've been like revisiting Fugazi and revisiting even like radio pop that at the time I was like, this sucks. I'm cool.
Oh my God.
Secretly liked.
Same. Do you know who I rediscovered? And I was so, so judgy about it back in college. Dave Matthews Band. I was always like, he's such a poser. They're just trying to be fish in the dead. And now I'm like driving through the streets and I'm like, I know every word to this song. How is that possible?
Dave Matthews is a human thumb ring.
I mean, it's so true. But I was sitting there and I was like, God, Alyssa, you are such a cunt. Like, how could you have hated Dave Matthews? He's awesome.
See, let's, you know what we should do to move toward happiness is avoid the negative self-talk. I would never call you a cunt, Alyssa. Only in the context of like good cunt. You're like a good cunt.
No, so I am a good cunt, but like at the time I just was really shitty and judgy to anyone. It's like if someone said they were going to a DMB concert, I was like, ugh, you're so trite. You know, and like the thing that makes me happy is when I evolve. And so I consider this a great evolution.
Well, let's hope that this country, like we as individuals, can evolve so that we don't have to revolution.
Oh, good. Yes. Very good.
Thank you. Well, Alyssa, this was so fun. I wish we could keep talking about being happy and screaming aloud in the car as a way to sort of keep us in fighting shape going into 2020. But I guess I'm going to talk to you in like 2 or 3 weeks.
And please say hi to all my people in the motherland that is, or actually it's my fatherland, that's okay. Italy. The only place where people have pronounced my last name correctly on the first try.
Oh, really? Do I say it right?
How do you say it?
Mastromonaco.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Whew. What? That would have been so embarrassing.
Dodged a bullet on that one.
Whew. Okay, I'll say hi to the fatherland for you, Alyssa, and talk to you soon.
Bon voyage.
Bye. Stick around, there'll be more hysteria after the break.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Brian Tyler Cohen, host of the No Lie podcast, which is part of Crooked Media. You've likely seen my videos online or watched me torture Tommy Vitor as part of our series on YouTube. But this week, I've got a really exciting episode. I'm interviewing the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. So if you want to tune in and hear what he's got to say, including a definitive answer as to whether or not aliens are real, make sure to listen by searching for No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to More Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. Now comes the point in the show where we talk for a long time about a thing we think about a lot, personal, political. First, I want to introduce the amazing women who are joining me today. First off, we have actor, comedian, woman with French writing on the back of her shirt, Megan Gailey.
Bonjour. when you said French, I was like, I guess I'll say bonjour. But then I was like, I don't want to. Like, this isn't what I want to do. But
you did it. You did it. I respect that you brought it.
We had a French teacher growing up who had a Southern accent.
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, no.
So it was like really.
Can you do an impression?
Bonjour, class. I mean, that's like what we were getting.
Oh, that's great.
Je m'appelle Karen.
Next up, we have working actor. On a new show that just got picked up, which is so, so exciting. Kieran Deal.
Hi.
I'm so glad that you're here.
I'm here.
It's been a minute.
I know. I think there was a snafu where I didn't get they didn't send me the dates.
You thought you were getting fired.
Yeah. I guess that's it now. One job at a time.
We were supposed to do a show Sunday together.
Yes, that was a that was uh, that was my fault.
Okay.
That was actually my fault, but I let her know about mm-hmm. that.
I always think of you, the one time that you said, Kieran, that you lie in wait like Nosferatu to yeah. be summoned. So I'm just picturing you lying in wait and being like, I'm not getting any emails. I don't need to go in hysteria. So you just kind of are.
Yeah, just lying there.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. I was like, oh, well, it's time to go. The people have summoned me. Yeah.
Well, you've been summoned, and I'm glad that you floated in here a few inches off the ground. It was real creepy this early in the morning, but I accept you as is.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That's why I like this program.
And third, a special guest today, her first time on Hysteria, Crooked Media's own Priyanka Arabindi. Hello.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks
welcome.
For having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I've wanted you on Hysteria since we started.
Well, I love your show, and I've wanted to be on since you started. So this is really exciting.
Yay. How have you been? How's Crooked right now?
Crooked is good. Crooked is busy.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. How's writing What a Day?
Oh, you know. Just my editor's on vacation right now. So
it's all you.
It's a little crazy.
Oh, yeah. But... Brian has been Instagramming a lot about being places that aren't where he's supposed to be.
Yep. So crazy week, but he's back. Next weekend. So
oh, that'll
be good.
That's good. Then you can just totally be dead weight and let him do all the work.
Exactly.
Well, when we were coming up with a topic for today, we gave Priyanka as the guest the option. And there were two options that we had it narrowed down to. And Kieran, I'm looking at you because I cannot wait for your reaction to this.
Oh, boy.
The choices were, I wanted to do power, uh-huh. do a whole show on like power, which I was like, that is such a Kieran topic.
Yeah.
Kieran would love to talk about power.
But God damn it, Priyanka.
Sorry.
What are you doing to us?
But the other one is something that I've wanted to do for a really long time because it's something that every female friend that I have has like an opinion on and personal mm-hmm. experience with, and that's crying, which is sort of,
sorry.
I like crying. So
this
you
is like Indian on Indian.
Okay. I know you're
we're supposed to be a team. We're 50-50 today. We're 50-50.
If you want to shift your body language to me, you can.
But I think crying is another way that people express where they stand in a hierarchy, power, lack thereof, frustration. I had a former colleague who used to refer to a specific type of frustrated crying as math tears, which... As a woman who was not bad at math when I was younger, I still get it. Like, it's the frustration of, like, not being able to solve a problem. But anyway, so tears happen for a whole bunch of reasons, especially for women. So I wanted to start by asking this opening question, and I'll throw it to you first, Priyanka, since you're our guest. When is the last time you cried, and what were the circumstances?
Well, okay, first of all, I'm floored by the term math tears. Like, that's never occurred to me, and that's so applicable.
Right, you know what it is, even
yeah,
if it
oh
was,
my God.
It was not about math.
I'm just sitting here amazed. But actually, this is a... great time for this podcast. I feel like I'm in like a season of my life where I'm crying a decent amount. So I was like, okay, I feel prepared.
Are you crying right now?
Yeah, I'm actually just shedding tears.
You've got like what's the Lauren from the Hills? Remember when she cried and just like two little things of mascara?
Or just like wet eyes in your eyes, but it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like pretty crying. You're wow. pretty crying right
Thank
now, Priyanka.
Thank you. No, but I was like, oh, like when was, it's kind of hard to put a finger on it. Actually, I cried last night. So prepared really well for this podcast.
Oh, great. Great.
Yeah. It was in preparation though. So it didn't count.
Yeah. I was like, I want to be asked back. Like, I want them to know I'm a good guest. I'm committed. So yes, I cried last night. The circumstances, I was, okay. So I feel like I don't cry because I'm stressed out. I feel like being stressed out makes like a prime condition for you mm-hmm. for other things to make you cry. Mm-hmm. So I was super stressed out, super anxious. And then there were a few things that happened and I kind of was like, oh, okay, like I'm crying. This is happening. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was going to be one of those things where I was like, this is like a 5-minute thing and like we're going to be over it and it'll be fine. And then it ended up being like a way longer thing.
What are we talking here? 20 minutes, an hour, 90?
An evening.
We're talking an evening. We're talking
an evening.
Evening.
Oh, an evening. An evening of tears.
An evening of like...
It's like sporadic.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like it comes in waves.
Yeah. The hours are lost though.
Yes.
Oh definitely. Yeah. And your face looks very good for having cried last night.
Okay. There's
it's
this
cleansing.
Crazy
tears.
Thing.
Tear
you can
cleansing.
Definitely tell when your eyelids are puffy, but mm-hmm. I also have a wrinkle that comes out like right under my eyelids after I cry. So I'm like, you guys probably can't tell, but now everyone's looking at my face. Can't tell. But yes, so I cried recently.
So you've been in a crying phase?
Yes.
Do you, Kieran and Megan, do you guys, have you found that you go through phases where you cry more or cry less?
Yeah.
No.
Really? Do you just not cry, Kieran?
Kieran's like, I never cry.
I cry, but I wouldn't say it's phase oriented.
It's just completely whenever. It's a very honest cry. You're always coming at it from the same baseline.
I think it's always the same baseline.
Interesting. When was the last time you cried?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Wow.
But I have a very bad memory.
Okay.
For my own human patterns. It's because of all the lying down. I just have a bad memory, I couldn't, if it was yesterday or if it was this week, I could tell you. But I was trying to think of a time that I cried. I cried in Up, the beginning of Up.
Oh, really? Yeah.
The one time that everybody cried?
So did everybody.
That's right. That was my example
for you.
That
movie came out like 9 years ago.
Shut up, Priyanka. I'm talking about power. So you guys are all talking about tears. And I was like, a time that I felt powerful was.
The beginning of Up? That would be disturbing. Yeah.
I was like, die, old man, die. You're never going on vacation.
It's terrible. I'm joking.
Well, I guess here, let's tie this into the idea of like power and femininity.
I know the last time I cried, though.
What was it? Sorry, go ahead, Megan.
I thought it was Booksmart, but then I realized I cried 2 days after I saw Booksmart. I was at a Dodgers game on Memorial Day, and a World War II veteran who was in a wheelchair, who was 96 years old, threw out the first pitch, and I just started sobbing.
Did you text about this? I feel like I saw some sort of...
Oh, I tweeted. Okay. I definitely tweeted about how much... Because I just love old people so, so much. So yeah. Memorial Day is kind of like...
Your thing.
My thing, you know? It's my pride. I just like, I'm like, yes, they're everywhere. And like, they're just in their hats. And like, oh, I would love to go on an honor flight. Like, I just love them. I worked at a retirement community. They are angels. But I was with my mom and dad. And, you know, so I was sort of, I mean, crying at a sporting event is a very, very vulnerable thing. So I had sunglasses on, I had a hat on, whatever. But then I looked over and my mom and my dad were both crying.
Oh.
So I was like, all right, we just love World War II.
That's a very, like, yeah, that's a warm cry. I'm curious, is yours related to, is it like related to your personal life? Is it related to family? Is it just general stress?
It's you know, related to work things, which is weird to say on a work.
Yeah. It's really stressing
you out. Hey, bosses. Yeah. No. But like I would say that I've never been like a big personal life crier.
Yeah.
Like there are, it's just mostly like a stress situational thing. And I was reading like some of the stuff that our amazing producer Caroline pulled about like situations and power in crying and things like that. Like I feel like a lot of my crying is not because I want it to be. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes people are like, oh, like if this would feel really good right now, mm-hmm. like I want a good cry. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sometimes it's like, great, I'm going to watch a sad movie. But most of the time it's like, and I feel not so great. And yeah. I don't necessarily want to be crying right now. I just am in my car and, oh, shit, I'm really upset. And like now I'm crying down La Cienega Boulevard. Like, this is embarrassing.
Yeah.
I would say if I'm in therapy, like if I think I started therapy one time and it was like this, like, actually hilarious woman. Oh, she was my favorite therapist, but she dumped me. She kind of ghosted, whatever.
Oh, no.
But she was
wow.
this woman, this is an Asian American woman, but it was like, the reason I love this therapist is because it would be like, you'd say anything. You'd be like, yeah, I lie in bed, you know, lie in wait, like Nosferatu. Wow. Yes. Like, wow. And you could say anything. And it was like, I had a really good shit this morning. Wow. Yes. That's what she would always do. But it was like the first session she wanted like a layout or a breakdown. And it was like after, and I remember leaving there feeling like really, oh, that felt very, because this is a stranger. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It's like after a first, session is a stranger. And so it's like I felt very like too vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I felt really, really bad for like a while afterwards. And then I cried then.
Honestly, crying in front of someone you just met is more vulnerable and awkward than having sex with someone that you just met, I think. Because it's like you know, whatever. Sex can be like theatrics and stuff, but crying is like just pure emotional expression, and it's so much more. Like, do you know what I mean? It's so private in a lot of cases. That's why it's something like Priyanka, you were saying, you do in your car, or it's something in New York.
Yeah, there's no windows there. Nobody can look in. Yeah. I like when you look in.
Yeah,
and
but you
see,
like drive away. Yeah. I don't care. I don't know you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't have to face you tomorrow.
Or like in New York, there's always like people crying on the subway because there's no private places in New York. So you just have to cry wherever you can. You walk and you cry. It's like you walk and you eat, you walk and you cry. There's no, you got to do all of it at once.
I saw a woman coming out of a coffee shop on Wednesday, and she had clearly just been crying. And I felt myself like fascinated with her. Like I was like, I want to know what's going on. And is it like I was staring at her and it's like, that's not what she wants me to be doing. But I felt this need to like know why she was crying.
Mm-hmm. There's when I was walking with my mom when I was home, and there was a boy, and she's like, why is he getting on his bike right now? I mean, and I was like, oh, he was crying. And she's like, oh no. Like, cause it was like, he was like wiping his eyes, you know, like on the lawn. I will say that when I see someone else cry, even if it's a dear friend, it's almost, sometimes you should just like let someone cry. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but it's like,
totally.
But the knee jerk is like, you want to make it better. I don't know if other people feel this way, but you want to make it better or you want to make it okay. I have a friend who went through a very, you know, sad personal circumstance and situation with her husband. And, you know, the whole thing was like just really falling apart. And and she was in a hotel room and she was telling me about it. And it was like, and she's a very, you know, a very strong person, but you can be a very strong person and cry, you know, but I could tell how much she didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And it was also like, and then you also feeling like you don't want somebody to, I was surprised at how much my knee-jerk reaction was to be like,
don't do it.
No, not to don't do it. But no, like more like kind of, oh, like trying to make it better, trying to assuage it as opposed to just like let it be sad.
Yeah.
Sometimes something can just be
sad. It's a hard
sad.
Thing to sit with, especially when you're like one-on-one with someone and you're like, I don't want you to feel this way. You're like, what do I do?
But have you ever hugged someone or like had someone tell you, let it out, cry? Like not even, they don't even say cry, but they can see, you know, you start to get like the yips and your voice shakes. And I've had many, many instances in my life. And I also feel like I get stereotyped as a crier. Like when I start crying in front of somebody, they're like, of course she is. And it's like, fuck you. That's actually not who I am. I think I cry probably if I were to take like a Cosmo quiz, like an average amount. But I've gone in. Listen, I was at Dry Bar yesterday and there were all these Cosmos everywhere. And a woman said that she came from a foot massage. And I was like, go to hell. So
did you cry?
No, I wanted to fight her and I didn't even read it. I was just like, this is a lie. So I remember an instance where I was like living with friends, but I knew the guy much. I was living with a married couple and I knew the husband much better. He wasn't there and he has no emotional support capabilities. And so I had a terrible phone call and I went inside and I like the wife like walked towards me and hugged me and I just sobbed down her back. Mm-hmm. And then I hugged her for probably 5 minutes crying. And then I was like, thank you so much. And we parted ways.
I mean, that was the last time I ever saw her.
And then I came, then 5 minutes later, the guy and his wife came home. And who was that? I thought it was her. She kind of looked like her, but it was.
I just love that, Megan, you were like, people assume that I'm a crier. And then your like parallel to that was, I cry an average amount. It was a Cosmo quiz. It's just like so perfect that you're like, why would they assume that about me? But I get it. I know what you mean.
I think it's interesting to talk about like the circumstances under which we cry and the ways that they kind of differ. My last couple cries have been they've kind of run the gamut. Like I had a World War II veteran cry. I was listening to the radio in my car and they interviewed this British guy who had been in the first wave of D-Day. And listening to him talk about it and thinking about him as like basically a child, like running onto the beach into gunfire,
was like emotionally overwhelming for me. And thinking about, you know, my grandparents and my, both of my grandpas served in the military. One was one never got sent. He enlisted and was in San Diego, and the other one was in the Army. And just thinking about that made me just like very, I don't know, it was like grateful and sad. And like, I just wanted to give him a hug. And also he had like a British accent, which made it somehow. So that was like a warm cry. And then I had like a cold cry, like a frustrated cry for like no reason. I was packing for this wedding that I'm about to go to. And I asked my boyfriend which dress I should wear. I sent him two pictures. And both of them are floral patterned Yumi Kim dresses.
Okay.
And he goes, do you have anything that isn't floral? No. Which is fine. I mean, fine. You don't have to like floral.
But you have to like Yumi Kim.
I know. It's a wedding. And
we are available to donate those dresses.
I was packing and I was like stressed out and I was like worried about sending my cat to boarding. I've never boarded her, but there's just all this stuff, pre-travel stress. Mm-hmm. And that one thing was like, you know, don't understand. It was so stupid. Mm-hmm. It was so stupid. It was one of those things that while it was happening, I was like, this is, I'm engaging in emotional stupidity right now, but I can't stop it. How do I stop this? I don't know.
I'll add a third type of cry, angry cry. If I'm like so pissed, and this is the cry that's actually, I think, the worst, because you're like, this is not representative of what emotion I'm feeling right now. I actually want to like scream and punch you, but I'm so angry and frustrated. Like when I would get in fights with like my brothers, I would cry and they'd be like, bah! You're a little bitch. They would never. But that's what I think someone who sees me in a fight crying is like, you fucking pussy.
Yeah. Like sorrow, like deep sorrow crying. It like at my, and this is an appropriate place. The other thing is like appropriate versus inappropriate places to cry, because we have those. And I know, at least, I don't know if you feel this, but like in Indian culture, in my family, I know that it's like, people don't generally cry, but then at a funeral, it's like wailing. It's like people actually, there's they have like a mourning thing where everyone comes over and like cries together, and they put like a white sheet down. Wow. This is a Sikh family. So it's like they put a white sheet down and then it's like people bring food, but it's like people like talk about the person and then they cry together. But I was really surprised that I spoke at that funeral, and it was like right before I went up. And then when I went up, I was really, really crying. Like I didn't know if I was going to get through it. Mm-hmm. And that was a really very vulnerable, because it's a room full of people. Do you know what I mean?
Room full of people, you know.
Yeah, you have to see them after. And it's like, but I was really surprised by how like, this is something very interesting about the idea of like the family or bearing witness. It's almost like somebody bearing witness to emotion in that way. It's kind of like, it's like a wedding. I mean, this very private expression of love in a public moment. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's this, like, that's when you have a group of people like witnessing sorrow. Mm-hmm. It's a similar,
yeah, it's like a collective cry, which is totally different than like the individual like anger cry or frustration cry that you have, or like the warm sadness cry, or the up cry, which is the last time apparently you cried.
I thought of a good one. I don't know if this was the last one. I don't know if I have a good one. Well, there's two. So it's like, I think sometimes it's funny, when my mom's brother passed away, and he passed away really young. So he died, and we went to the funeral, and I remember I saw him and I felt a lot of relief and a lot of peace. I was like, oh, he's at peace now. I remember thinking that. I was like, oh, it's just like, can't, you know, and was able to like, I was really glad I went. But there is a moment when his mom, when they were taking the coffin out, when his mom who wouldn't have been able to understand like 90% of the ceremony, because she doesn't really speak English. It's like, as they're taking the coffin out, she just like takes her hand and she just like touches the side of it. You know what I mean? Like just touches the side of it. And it was just like that was like a moment when I just remember it, like it was like a punch in the heart, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's one. And then the second one, this is sometimes when somebody does something really moving, like I had a really, I was having a tough time. It was like my dad had been sick and I had just gotten to New York, and somebody was, you know, a partner was supposed to leave me a key or meet me off of the bus for a key and like left me stranded in New York with all my suitcases for like 3 hours in this like diner. And it was like midnight. And I went to the thing. I went to the thing and the guy was like, oh, is like, is everything okay? Mm. And I just kind of like, I kind of like nodded and I didn't mean to start crying. You know what I mean? But it was like, I think I started crying and he was the nicest. He just was like, let me get you some tea and like, I can keep this place open. He's like, you're going to be fine. Sometimes somebody's like compassion.
Yeah. Tea is so nice. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, and he was like, he's like, we don't have to close, you know, it's just like this. It was very sweet.
Oh, that is really moving.
It was very, I mean, that was very sweet.
And
he
it's
was
coming
like,
from a stranger, total when someone you know is who actually let you down.
Yeah, it was a stranger. He was like, he was, and because I think you see a young girl in New York with all her suitcases in a place and she's been sitting there for 3 hours. You don't know the circumstances.
Yeah, you try and fuck her usually.
Yeah, it was a
thing. It's interesting your mind went there. I was thinking.
Well, whenever I had a suitcase in New York, I was like, everyone's going to try and fuck me because they think I just got thrown out of my boyfriend's apartment. And they're like, no, she's ripe.
I was really surprised at like the level of compassion that like, but there's a there. And maybe it's because there is so much like public, so like because you cry in public and whatever else, there was like the sense of like the cab driver could see I was really upset and was like, are you OK? Like, right. There was like the sense there, I was surprised at like the level of like community fabric in a moment where you felt vulnerable.
New York is like that. I found it's a lot nicer and warmer a place. One time I fell down the stairs in the subway station and I scraped down the front of my shins. I was in a dress and I scraped down the front of my shins and rather than wait for like first aid or whatever, I just stood up and I was like, well, I guess I'm going to get on the train. And my like blood was running down my legs and everything. It was like a short story that was meant to be heartwarming because like every stop people got off and people got on and every stop somebody asked me if I was okay. And like this little like abuela handed me a fistful of McDonald's napkins and said something to me in Spanish. And it was like everyone was so kind and like looking out for somebody who, I mean, I was bleeding on the train, but it was like everyone was nice. I think that's something that you find in cities where everybody is experiencing the same reality. I don't think LA is a place where that's happening because we're sort of
separated.
Mm-hmm.
But because I think there's an empathy of like, I could have been that. I could have been the person who fell on the train.
We've all been
the person who like, and then it's like, what would I want somebody to do for me? I think there's a sense of, and everyone's kind of alone traveling on the subway.
People can identify a New York rock bottom when they see it. So they're like, I've been there, girl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, let's pivot to talking about crying at work, because I think this is a very loaded topic. And Priyanka, I want to start with you. What do you think about crying at work? Have you ever done it? And if you have to, what do you do? Do you just do it in the open or do you go into like the bathroom?
I have never cried in the open at work. I don't know if anyone else has here, but I never have. I've cried like after hours, like when but in general, I'm like a solo crier. Like I have not really done the thing where I'm like walking around New York City crying. People have done that before and been like, oh yes, like I get a lot of comfort or whatever. Like I'm like kind of not a public crier. So I've cried like after people have left, like in an office space here in our old therapy room. Where else? In the bathroom? That's like not an ideal situation. But like I've never been like at my desk openly crying.
Crooked, why are you hurting Priyanka so much?
Guys, are you going to be so nice to me?
What is going on? She's like, I've cried here. I've cried here under this table.
Actually in the studio. Yeah,
I've cried in this studio. This I've cried like under that sofa.
It's like a really depressing verse in a Ludacris song. Like I will cry with you in the back of the Cadillac on the 50-yard line of the Georgia Dome. Actually, that's nobody's fantasy. Having sex on the 50-yard line of a football field.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, wow.
But just on the crying at work thing, what do you think about, like, have you ever, I'm sure you've seen people.
I've seen other people, like, no one in a direct situation with me, but I've seen, like, you know, when I was an intern, there was an older editor who was crying, but to, I mean, someone that she worked with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I also was maybe like what, like 19 or something at the time and had just really entered workspaces and was like, oh, like that doesn't seem like something that's great to be doing. And honestly, she seemed fine. Like after it happened, like, right. I think like the situation worked out, whatever. And she ended up great. So like maybe it is something that is like totally okay.
Yeah. But I mean, why don't you think it would be okay?
I feel like it's something you're socialized to be like, oh, especially if you are a woman at work, like you don't want to do that. Like you don't want to be seen that way by your coworkers. You like don't want to make your boss feel weird. There's all of these like hard kind of like, I don't want to put this on someone else. And I also don't want to like feel embarrassed. I feel like that's a big thing with crying. You don't, it's like a shameful almost thing, even though it shouldn't necessarily be. It kind of, I'm still very much grappling with that. I'm like, I don't love crying in front of other people, even when they're people that I'm close with.
Yeah. Right. Do you think it's because when, I mean, on one hand, it's good to demonstrate control of your emotions in a professional environment, because if everybody just kind of let everything fly, then nobody would get anything done. It would be very entertaining, but nobody would get anything done. But I think part of it sometimes, the shame and the judgment around crying comes from the fact that when women externalize their emotions, we feel shame about that. We feel shame around getting angry or displaying anger, feel shame around crying because we make our emotions like someone else has to deal with them. Mm-hmm. And the act of making somebody else deal with them almost feels like this kind of internalized thing where like, oh, fuck, I made myself somebody else's problem and that's bad. I'm being bad.
I don't feel guilt, like, especially if I'm, like, angry. I don't feel guilt about it, but I think there are repercussions.
Okay,
For, you know, if you are angry in a certain context or whatever else, it's like, even down to, like, you know, there'll be times in stand-up. Like, I remember one time somebody described me as, like, an angry, sexy Lewis Black.
Ooh.
And, like, as a bad thing. And I was like, that sounds so marketable.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds fucking marketable. And then it was, like, a little bit like, it was an executive and it was like, but seriously, you should probably smile a little more. You should probably make it a little more palatable. And I was like, Bill Burr would never hear that. Like, and it was just being aware that like there are repercussions, especially depending on who the gatekeepers are or who is in charge or who are the bosses for your behavior. Mm-hmm. So part of it can also be just like, it might not be an internalized shame. It might be an awareness that you're in a society and that there will be repercussions, and a way you are perceived because you can't control the way that other people perceive you. I was fired for like the second time from one of my first jobs for this just god awful production company. But it was very sudden. Like it was very, very sudden. I had said something, I think I had like kind of set a boundary, which was very, very reasonable with a boss. And it was enough to get fired like the next day because the company was really broken. But it was like I walked into the office and I remember he fired me and I was just, and that was a moment when I like teared up and I could tell he was like, oh shit. Like you could see it on the boss's face and like, it was just like,
oh shit. And like I made her upset or oh shit, I have to deal with this.
I mean, it looked like, I mean, I could tell he like legitimately felt bad because it like, he knew me well enough to know that wasn't something like I would normally do.
Right.
But that was a moment when I was like so angry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a pretty unjust, it was a pretty unfair circumstance.
And you want to be like, I'm not crying because I'm sad I can't work here anymore. I'm crying because I'm pissed off that you did this.
Yeah. I was like, this is a what the fuck cry.
Yeah.
You know?
I also think crying at work, like, it depends. I think people's like guilt over it depends on the situation. Like if you get a phone call and they're like, hey, so-and-so passed. Like
right.
I was nannying once. I mean, and that was my work. And I got a call. My grandma died. And so I like called the dad. Actually, the dad was home. So it's like, let me leave. So I went in there and I was like, my grandmother passed away and I was crying. And so it's like, yeah, please. But if you're crying at work about work, that's when sort of like the antennas of like, is this inappropriate?
Yeah.
Start coming in. If you're crying about
totally
things outside of work, and I think it's the stigma is around crying about work at work.
Yeah, although I do have a sort of exception that proves the rule story about that. When I was working in finance and I hated it and I wanted to die, I was sort of starting to dip my toe into writing, but I didn't know how I was going to do it. I was like, I don't know, it was 2011, so almost eight years ago. And so at this place where I was working, I had a mid-year review and my boss was like a really nice guy. Everyone I worked with was very nice. The work was just wrong for me. And in my mid-year review, I burst into tears and it was not strategic. It just was completely like, unhappy. I was just unhappy. I was being asked if I was happy, and the answer was no, opposite. I'm very unhappy. And then a few months later, I got a job offer from this website that I eventually ended up working for. On the day that I quit, I asked for them to lay me off instead of quitting because I'd been there for years, and you know, and they agreed, partly because I was so visibly unhappy during the mid-year review. I still did my work. I still performed just fine. But they were like, yeah, you're very, like, we would like for you to be happier. We will, here's a severance. You can go be a writer. And so that ended up being a good work cry, but I have never, ever heard of a work cry helping a person get what they want aside from that.
I cried in a job interview.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it for?
Like, honestly.
The way you say, obviously.
It was obviously. So embarrassing. It was to, like, work with, it was like to be an actor, basically, at the Indianapolis Children's Museum. And so they asked me what I was, like, most proud of in my life. And at the time, I was helping take care of my grandmother who had Alzheimer's. So I started talking about that. And then they were like, asked me more questions. And it was just so personal and intense for me in that moment that I started crying. Mm. And then of course I did not get the job because they were like, this woman can't be around children. Like, she's crying in the children's museum about nothing.
Kids do get worried when they see adults cry. It's deeply unmooring.
But they like come and hug you, I think, or, you know, they're like, do you have a boo-boo? I've been asked that before. Like, are you okay? Like, I think kids have a sort of like empathy and are actually warmer to someone crying than adults are at times.
I guess I feel less uncomfortable by it and less like, oh, I have to make it better. It's my job.
They're like, just I just cried. Like,
what?
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
I just shit my pants.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're the same.
Wait, did you also shit your pants in the children's season?
No, but I've shit my pants before and I did not cry.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Here's one aspect of crying that I think is part of the reason that there's like a stigma around it is because a lot of people view it as manipulative. Like, have you guys watched the new season of Fleabag or the last season of Fleabag, the first season of Fleabag?
I've been busy.
Me too.
I watched the second season.
I've seen the memes.
The second season was excellent. The first season I did watch, but it's been a while. So yeah. I don't remember what you're talking about.
Well, there's a scene toward the end of the first season where she's talking to the woman that her father is sleeping with, her godmother. So her mother died and her father took up with their godmother. And like, she just kind of doesn't like the whole arrangement. And the godmother is played by Olivia Colman. And she's hilarious. And also sort of like this kind of dippy artist, self-involved bitch, but so funny, because Olivia Colman's a treasure. But Olivia Colman in the scene says, she starts crying. She, like, Fleabag does something and her face kind of breaks into this like cry in front of the dad. And Fleabag says, oh, fuck off, when she starts crying. Like, do you think that people use crying to manipulate people? Have you ever seen that happen?
Yes.
More skilled people than I certainly like feel like I can't. But
have you seen it happen? Have you ever felt manipulated by a cry?
No.
What?
Really?
You guys have such nice people around you. I feel like I've been manipulated by a cry and I've manipulated through cries. Like,
give some examples, because I'm sure.
A cop.
You cry. Oh, yeah.
Boo hoo.
Yeah. Crying in front of a cop sometimes works if you're a white lady and the cop is a white man.
Listen, I shot my shot and I scored.
Yeah. I love the way Gailey's like, donate the player, hit the game.
You can't fault me for trying. But I've also cried in front of a cop and he's like, bitch, this isn't happening. You know? So.
Yeah.
And then you wipe your eyes and you're like, give me my fucking ticket.
But of course.
You put your sunglasses on and you speed away.
I do think I've been like accused of a manipulative cry before.
Interesting. I find myself sometimes feeling shame when I cry because I don't want people to, I want people to understand that I can't help it. Like, I'm not doing it on purpose, but it's like.
I have seen a manipulative cry. Yes, I have. I'm sorry. That's why I was asking for a moment. A moment to think about it. When I was doing ayahuasca, there's like a group of people. It was during the ayahuasca, and I was like, this fucking white lady needs to shut the fuck up. No, I'm just joking. It wasn't there. But it was like, it was a week. It was like 10 days or something. And there was a girl who had
a week late. You weren't on ayahuasca for 10 days.
No, no. Okay, it was like, you do it three yes. times, but it was like, so it's a group of strangers. And then it's like, there's a girl who pretended to be someone else to get a second dose of the stuff, which is like actually pretty fucked up. And then got discovered doing it. And then like, and then there was like this like very warm, cause they're all fucking hippies, like this like kind of warm confrontation. But then, she started sobbing, and it was a very manipulative, you know, I mean, it was like one of the most psycho things I've ever seen. And then it was like, and then because of the way that she was in that moment, it was like, then she got asked not to be in the group. And then she was like screaming and crying later, like throwing like a massive tantrum in this way that was really, it was really unmoored. It was very unnerving.
We got to get her on the show.
Gotta go find her.
Fascinating.
Yeah, she was
we'll
grand.
Have her on the Power Show
because
with Jared.
You've seen people like in movies depicting like orphans and they like put a hat on to then get like a second serving of porridge.
Yeah.
But like to get a second serving of ayahuasca is so crazy.
And then there's a point when like she stopped crying and she was like, I did what I needed to do in the moment. And you're like, God damn. This just got
unchill.
Dark. Yeah. This got dark.
Extremely unchill. Children do this. I have a couple nephews who are toddlers, and one of them is about to turn 4 and one's about to turn 3, and they're both just pure joy. But I've seen one of them, the one that is my sister's son, my little sister, when she was a baby, was a manipulative little crier. Like she would fall and then she'd be fine. And then my mom would walk into the room and she'd be like, bah! Like she'd just start crying. And her son is just like her. He makes faces that look like her. And it's like, Mary, you have the child that you have earned. You don't remember how you were, but he's like a doll. He's amazing. But he does do the thing that Mary used to do, which is like, cry, like pretend to be like be okay until an adult appears and then cry to like get the adult to pick them up.
I did that
in the work scenario. I was thinking there's been times when I've been like the boss or the director, and like and I remember we did an episode on like emotional, how women have to deal with emotional labor of other people. And there's been like moments when people are being like so incredibly like they're like offloading onto me, and it's like, yo, I just need you to fucking like edit this thing, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I that sounds like a lot is happening for you. And also like you're on the clock and this is for money. So can you like not do this right now? Cause we have limited time together in this space. So it's like, I can, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I understand the idea that like people should be comfortable with their emotions, et cetera. But on the flip side of it, you know, I remember I've been frustrated. There's been a couple of times when I've been frustrated or had to deal with it when I didn't feel like it was
fair
or my responsibility to kind of, I don't like, if that was a dude, I don't know if he would have been expected to engage in like a therapy session. If that, you know, engage in like a mini,
right,
you know, 45, you know, a hot 45 take on like what's going on in your life kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think we just about solved crying. I think we figured it out because we're running out of time.
Is
but
it
we
over.
Yeah, I have to. It's over like a good cry. It's not an evening worth of crying. It's about, you know, a good 40 minutes. But before we end this part of the show, I wanted to ask the table, what's something that you go to when you need a good cry, or something that will, you know, is going to make you cry in a like nice way? Megan, do you know?
Yeah. Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Oh.
Every time I hear it, I feel cleansed and emotional. And I love it and I fear it for the power it has over me.
It is a beautiful song. I think the thing that automatically makes me cry is, I'm going to sound like a dude, like the last third of Field of Dreams. It's a baseball movie about ghosts that come back alive in Iowa, and Kevin Costner is a hot dad.
Oh, it's a whole lovely movie.
It's a whole thing, and Ray Liotta's in it as Shoeless Joe Jackson, and it's great. It's about, can you go back and fix things, or what is moving forward, what is whatever. It's so good. It's also baseball in Iowa, and I love it. Kieran, how
go
about you?
Go Priyanka first, because I'm still thinking.
Okay, I feel like songs, Landslide, Time After Time.
Which Landslide?
Scenics.
Okay.
Sure. My mom likes Time After Time.
Yeah, that one will make you cry like a little baby if you want. But yeah, those are like positive. I feel like you can spin it. You can spin it into a positive cry. You can spin it into a negative cry. Yeah. You can make it whatever you want to be. It's like pretty multi-purpose. But yeah, that'll get it going.
All right, Kieran, you're up.
When do I, if I need a good cry?
Yeah, what's something that reliably makes you cry or get emotional?
I got nothing, guys. I'm sorry.
Beginning of us?
I could, yeah, the beginning of us. Fuck you, Kaylee.
I'm helping you.
Yeah. I think Pixar. Actually, Pixar is very good. Pixar in general. Coco.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
They're very good. Like, they're very good at pushing emotional buttons, uh-huh. but in a way that plot is really, like, that grandma at the end yeah. with, like, her little singing, you know, sorry if that's a spoiler, you know what I mean? But it was a little, like, sometimes I'm like, all right, Pixar. I feel a little bit like that, but it is, I would say Pixar movies in general can really
You're
get
emotionally
me.
Manipulated by them.
Yeah.
I'm emotionally manipulated by Pixar. The one thing we didn't talk about that I am curious if you do have an opinion on, and it's not a good thing to bring up right at the end, so I apologize, was the idea of white women's tears. Like, I'm sure you've read a ton of articles about this, you know, and or like the idea of like if somebody is very sad, Megan, if somebody's very sad in like an office space, you know, or somebody expresses, you know, a form of injustice and then somebody else starts crying because it just seems so unfair. But then it's like the way it takes away somebody else's mm-hmm. kind of like agency, or then it makes it about comforting somebody else as opposed to like having the experience you're having.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important point. And it's something that you notice when there's any asymmetry, like the person with more power making the interaction about them instead of about the person that was harmed. So sometimes it's like a man being upset that a woman did something. A lot of times it's a white woman being upset that somebody pointed out that she's being fucked up or she did something wrong or getting caught trying to sneak ayahuasca. I think a lot of times those that the like white woman tears in and again, I
Aaron just did air quotes, which is right.
It doesn't mean just like every time a white woman cries, it's a specific type of like manipulative crying that is about being caught or called out. I think,
or even just or maybe even very defensive.
Yeah,
it's like if the person, I think that you said it well, it's like if the person who was harmed then has to spend the time comforting the person
who has more power than them who did the harming.
Right. In a circumstance.
I mean, I have to say that it is uncomfortable if you're a person who has more power being confronted about the fact that you're acting in a way that is fucked up and harmful, especially if you don't think of yourself that way. And I'm not defending women who react, but I understand the psychology of somebody being like, what the fuck? This is like fucking with my idea of who I am as a person.
Right. But it's identity related.
Exactly. But I also think that like facing the discomfort without realizing that it's like growth isn't shameful. Growth is painful, but it's not shameful.
Ooh. And to I think we got a merch item.
Growth is painful, but not shameful. I mean,
Aaron, Oprah, Ryan.
But I think back on, you know, things that I've been wrong about or dumb about or not known about and accidentally, not on purpose, ignorantly done to alienate people or make them feel as though I wasn't thinking about them, or especially like when I was early in my writing career, there are things where I was just like, oh my God, I didn't know, but I should have done a better job, you know? And I've always been uncomfortable and
that wasn't intention. I'm sure it was wasn't intentionally manipulative.
Right. But still the people that were hurt are people that have been dealing with this shit constantly. And so they have like this much patience left for it. So even though I didn't do all of the things that made them lose their patience, they still justifiably don't have any more patience for it. And so when I get like snapped at, it is not my job to respond by crying. Mm-hmm. Like it's something that I've had to work on. I don't think I was ever like crying when somebody was like, hey, you shouldn't say this about this, blah, 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 blah. I don't think I ever cried in response to that. But I'm expanding tears to mean like defensiveness and like weaponized sadness. Mm-hmm. And that's it's something that I think is, and it's like a muscle memory thing for a lot of white women. It's something that I think you have to like work to overcome. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It would help if I had like, can you be a little more specific? Well, no, I'm only asking because it's like, because when you talk about stuff generally, you know what I mean? Like when you're
Okay, here's an example. And I use this example a lot because it was like borderline traumatic. But I wrote this piece for Jezebel like 6 years ago that ended up being a shitstorm. And it was about how I didn't think selfies, I thought selfies were like aggressively not empowering and just kind of an expression of vanity. And I sort of hated how they're getting tangled up in feminist empowerment trademark. And I just wrote very generally about how putting a picture of yourself online is like an exercise in vanity. And in 99% of the time, it sort of is. But there's a 1% of the time when it's really not. And that's when there are groups that are like, look at me. You have to look at me. Like people who are disabled, people who are trans, like posting pictures of yourself online as you are living life as a trans woman or trans man is like really important to validating your identity and the way that you're living. And that wasn't, that was just an, like something that I just didn't even think about. I didn't think about it. And that was an example of like when people were confronting me about that, I was like, yeah, fuck you. You know, because I was like, I felt bombarded. But after you sort of the hurt and the sting of the shitstorm passed, I thought about it and I was like, yeah, you know what? This is a learning moment for me. Like, actually, there are groups of marginalized people who really value having their beauty validated. And it's kind of revolutionary for those groups. So that's an example. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Nice example.
That's a really good one. Yeah.
Thank you. Anyway,
you brought it up.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah,
I love that we were like, oh God, Karen, with the examples now.
No, I'm glad you brought it up. It's like, it's really important. I mean, tears are good and tears are bad, like all things. And I think that, you know, it's fun to weaponize them to get out of tickets, but
yeah. And we needed you to bring it up, you know, like unfortunately, that's a learning thing too of like, oh, we weren't even able to be like, let's talk some shit on ourselves. You had to point that out to us, and I sat here quietly nodding.
Megan, you're always on the shows where it's like, okay, white ladies, what's,
but
what's
that's
your
good.
Problem?
I gotta grow, y'all. I gotta grow.
Growth is, what was it? It's not shameful, but
it's painful, but it's not shameful.
Anyway, thank you guys. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, the hills will die on.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Brian Tyler Cohen, host of the No Lie podcast, which is part of Crooked Media. You've likely seen my videos online or watched me torture Tommy Vitor as part of our series on YouTube, but this week I've got a really exciting episode. I'm interviewing the 44th president of the United States, Barack Obama. So if you want to tune in and hear what he's got to say, including a definitive answer as to whether or not aliens are real, make sure to listen by searching for No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to More Hysteria. We've gotten to the part of the show where we take ardent stances on things that don't really matter. The hills will die on. Let's get started with our listener hill.
Hi, Hysteria. My name is Emma, and the hill I'll die on is that not all people who wear socks to bed are serial killers. Sometimes people are just cold, and saying that wearing socks to bed is sociopathic is discriminatory. Look, I have bad circulation, and in the winter, I need that extra layer of warmth on my extremities. I promise you, I'm not a serial killer. I'm just cold.
Oh, I think I respect that.
I know.
I grew up in a cold house. I wore socks to bed. Used to have to smear my feet with Vaseline at night because it was so cold and dry because we heated our house with a wood stove. So I am sock wearer as well.
Karen's not.
I don't think you guys are serial killers. I feel so bad that she even had to like clear it up for us.
Yeah, where is this a stereotype? Where are people like socks equal murder?
I do feel bad, but she also said it like four times.
Like, yeah. Like, okay. I think it was a little more
it was
like
a bit of a Dexter.
Yeah. The delivery had me questioning it, but it might have also been the topic.
Okay, I'll go next because mine's really stupid. Here's the hill I'll die on this week. It's more of a question that is like a, I don't know how to eat broccolini. It's too long. Mm-hmm. It's too tough. Do I cut it? Because you can't just like, it's hard to stab and just like put in your mouth whole. It's like you have to open your mouth really wide and parts of it stick out. So you have to cut it in order to fit it. But it's really awkward to cut it. Where do you cut it? Because there's so many different parts of it.
Yeah.
And it just like looks really weird. But they constantly offer regular broccoli is fine, guys. I don't care if it's a little bit more of a, you know, bold flavor if you make it broccolini instead of broccoli. I just would prefer to not have to like grab the end of the stalk and like bite it off in front of somebody and then put the piece back down on my plate.
I hate when that happens, when things become popular, like food wise, and they're like just very patently hard to eat.
Right.
And you're like, oh God, I got to deal with this for the next like 2 years.
Right.
This is the thing.
I almost think there's something that you order if you're an actress and you just don't plan to eat it, but it will look pretty sitting out in front of you.
I made broccolini last night. I like it better than broccoli.
It is tasty. It's really
tasty.
It's just unwieldy.
It's the thing I don't want to eat in front of other people.
Exactly.
Oh, got it. It's like it's a private.
Yeah.
It's like a private, like.
It's like right. Crying.
Yeah.
Priyanka's right. Going to be in a bathroom stall crying and eating broccolini.
Sushi and broccolini and everything else that I'm like, oh, can't do this with other people.
Multitasking, man. It's really important. Who wants to go next? Karen, you want to go next?
I don't like when Vimeo signs their emails love. Fuck you, Vimeo. Love Vimeo. They charged me like $85 for the year. And then they're like, love Vimeo. And I fucking wrote to them. I wrote to Vimeo.
This is a very white woman thing.
This is I get so angry. I mean, but this, you know this about me. I get so angry. Like, corporations make me angry just in general. I said, stop sending me messages with love in them. It's weird and creepy. You're a business that wants my money, which is why you lead with a veiled threat about why I should continue paying you money. Vimeo wrote back. Thanks for taking the time to write in today. I'm sorry if the context of that automated email caused some stress on your end.
Oh, God.
And then I'm like, I'll be sure to leave a detailed note for our product team letting them know. We appreciate you sending along your feedback. Is this even a person answering?
No,
I don't know.
Is this a fucking person? Said somebody who uses it, their name. It doesn't have a Y on the end. It has an I. And I'm like, oh, God. If there's anything you'd like me to add, please let me know. And it's like, yeah, stop fucking signing your emails love. You're not a person. You're not a person. You're what? You're a video upload service.
You know,
love Vimeo? Get out of my life.
Get him.
You know, under the Supreme Court, it's only a matter of time before corporations can legally love.
Right. Exactly.
we're getting close.
Right.
I appreciate that. I hate it when they're like too cute.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know, if when somebody loves me, they pay for the upload service. That's what they do. Or they give me their password and they give me discounts. That's fucking love. All right.
Okay. All right, Priyanka, do you have a hill?
Yeah, my hill isn't as hot of a take. Now I'm feeling unfortunate about it. Okay. My hill, I think, is that Sunday night is the best time for a first date.
Oh.
I think, like, it's like you would normally, until I had a Sunday first date,
everyone is shaking their head behind
really?
You. But okay. We were all charmed.
We were into it, and they were all like, nah.
They're all haters. It's fine. anyways, I think it's great because you can start kind of early. You can have a drink, maybe two if you want. You have a hard out because it's Sunday. It's like a good time. And otherwise, you're sitting there at your house and you're like, oh, shit, it's Sunday. Even if you like love your life, have like great things going on. Like no one's excited about like a day that is devoted to like your laundry and getting ready for the week. It like is kind of shitty. And you spend that time like sitting around, maybe watching TV, like just kind of waiting for the day to be over. And but like not really wanting it to be done. This kind of gives you something to look forward to do. And also, if it's going badly, you're like, great, it's Sunday, whatever. I never have to see you again. And I can get out of here, like, super fast. Well, I don't have to come up with an excuse. It's just easy.
The flip side of that is when the date is going too well. My first date with Josh was on a Sunday night, and I think we both strategically planned it because we were both like, okay, well, this is like a hard out. We ended up staying out until the bar closed. And then I went home with him and we continued to like drink and ended up like I slept over and then I had to go all the way to work.
Like, oh shit.
I had to go all the way to work in Santa Monica the next day. Like,
so can you be more specific?
We held hands.
You had a sexy Sunday.
Well, it was not the Lord's Day. That's for sure. But I went home with him and the next day I had to like go to work very hungover. And he was like at the time, like freelancing and screenwriting. And so he was like, bye. Like he just had like this whole day to like recover. And yeah, it was a good date, obviously, because we're still together. But it was like also, it was when Sunday dates go too well.
Okay.
But it was a good,
I agree with you.
That you're okay
that
on that.
That is like a very, very rare situation. I feel like most first dates aren't like your greatest date ever. I don't know.
I just love her. Okay, was like, all right, shut up, Erin.
You're really happy.
Yeah, she's like too nice to say it, but it was just like, all right, yeah, okay,
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Good bitch. Point. What a burden.
I'm just saying, you know, be careful what you wish for. Okay, Megan, you want to bring us home?
I've blacked out on a Sunday first date.
I've been to a party with you. She likes to drink.
I actually cried and fell asleep at the bar and was thrown out of the bar. And then that man and I dated for like 6 months. So it was the day my grandmother died and my parents forced me to go on the date still. So
wow. Whatever. There's a lot.
It's so much. We'll do a whole episode on it. This man also once wouldn't let me give him a blowjob because he said I was too drunk to consent. Okay. So my hill.
More. Keep going. More.
My hill.
Let's
is,
go deeper.
I don't know if this is a Los Angeles thing. I feel like the middle of the country probably has this down better. Large restaurants with one bathroom. Mm-hmm. It's like, I went to a restaurant the other day. We've got a patio. We've got an indoor. We've got a back patio.
And I know the one.
And it's like, that's not enough. There are drink stations. There was a bar. There's lemonade. People are hydrated and they need to go pee. And you need to have more bathrooms. I understand if you want to have unisex ones that many, many people can go to. But you need to have like four of those. Mm-hmm. I think at bare minimum, because then you just have a line of people waiting in the restaurant to go into the bathroom. And it's inappropriate and it's bad.
How are you going to clean that if there's only one or two? That's a disaster. That's disgusting.
It's horrible. But and these are nice restaurants.
Yeah. I think I know is it in Highland Park?
No.
Is it in Atwater?
No.
Whoa.
That's what I'm saying. They're everywhere.
Wow. Because I was thinking of a specific one that's kind of over by where you live. And I was like, yes, I know the one. But no, you're right.
And now I know what you're talking about. Yeah. But no, it's in Los Feliz.
Oh, man. What a scourge. Okay. Well, I'm glad that we all died.
Hipsters aren't supposed to pee.
Oh, yeah. The idealized version of it, you can, if you drink strategically, you can just reabsorb it. Your body becomes a closed system and you never have to pee.
You're like a bear hibernating.
I just love to pee. I love to pee.
What's it called? Ketosis?
I don't know if that's what it's called. Oh, okay.
Like, what a fun new word. Okay, well, that's all the time we have. Kieran and Megan, thank you so much for stopping by. Priyanka, please come by again.
Oh, my God, thanks for having me. I'm glad I didn't scare you off with all my crying.
Yeah. I'm glad none of us cried this time. I consider this episode a success. Also, thank you to Alyssa Mastromonaco for calling in. And there will be more hysteria next week.
If you guys like Pod Save America, please consider subscribing to our Friends of the Pod program. So Friends of the Pod get lots of stuff. You get more Pod Save America. That includes our new show, which is called Pod Save America Only Friends.
It's where Dan gets naked.
Where Dan gets full frontal nudity, but mostly it's a bi-weekly subscription exclusive podcast that is basically Pod Save America, but behind a paywall. So it's a little bit looser and more fun. And it's Lovett and Favreau and me and Pfeiffer and then other Crooked hosts. We go deeper on the news and cover more stories. You also get Open Tabs, which is a weekly behind-the-scenes newsletter from the show. Plus, you get ad-free episodes of your favorite Crooked podcasts and all kinds of other stuff. Dan will come to your house and clean it once every quarter.
Yeah, clothes.
Dan is very busy, clothes only. But along with just getting great content, becoming a friend of the pod, joining our subscription community, is the number one thing you can do to help us grow, to help independent progressive media. So if you've ever thought about doing it, if you ever wanted more Pod Save America, consider going to crooked.com/friends and becoming a friend of the pod.